Good morning. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Kari Hong, and I represent appellant Saul Martinez. There are four reasons as to why the district court has jurisdiction over my client's APA claim. The first is that there's no authority for the government's argument that the Real ID Act strips jurisdiction from federal courts to consider APA claims. The government is arguing that my client's APA claim is a direct challenge to his deportation order. However, by design and definition, the APA claim focuses on agency actions and isn't a direct attack on any deportation order. Singh v. Gonzalez, which was erroneously and ironically cited by the government, recognizes this distinction. Singh held that removal orders have a very specific and narrow definition and are different from collateral challenges brought by non-citizens to removal orders. And the Real ID Act does not disturb jurisdiction for collateral attacks. In Singh, the petitioner brought a habeas challenge raising IAC, and the court held that was a collateral attack, and therefore the Real ID did not strip jurisdiction. In my client's civil complaint...
Doesn't the actual language of the Real ID Act preclude this from happening? The INA now contains a provision entitled Exclusive Means of Review. Are you familiar with that?
Is that 1252A5?
Yes. 1252A5, yes.
Yes.
And that's just not your read, because it says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, including Section 2241 of Title 28 or any other habeas corpus provision, and Sections 1361 and 1651 of such title, a petition for review filed with an appropriate court of appeals in accordance with this section shall be the sole and exclusive means for judicial review of an order of removal. And isn't that, in essence, what you're seeking here, is an additional method of review of an order of removal?
Well, Singh v. Gonzalez agrees with my reading that, citing to St. Cyr at page 978, Singh makes it very clear that what exactly is an order removal applies only with respect to review of an order removal, and that it simply cannot be the consolidation of any issue that's brought in for judicial review. And Singh v. Gonzalez asked this question already and answered it in my client's favor. What's important, I think, in the facts in my client's case...
Well, but doesn't Singh... You're talking about Singh versus...
Singh v. Gonzalez, a 2007 case?
Well, there's a 2011 case, Singh versus Holder, that says the Real ID Act was thus intended to reinstate a system abbreviating the process of judicial review by effectively limiting all aliens to one bite of the apple with regard to challenging an order of removal. That's a 2011 case. So I think it's creative what's happening here, but I'm just not sure you have good authority.
I would submit, actually, in the 2011 case, the court actually held that the district court had jurisdiction over that habeas petition, which was a review over a Casas bond hearing. It went on to apply that law to determine that collateral challenges are not subject to the Real ID jurisdiction stripping clause. What both Singh v. Gonzalez does and Morales Izquierdo, the two authorities in the Ninth Circuit, they look at the nature of the claim that the non-citizen is bringing. And Mr. Martinez's claim is that he's not challenging the basis for the adverse credibility finding of his asylum claim.
But he's seeking the same relief.
Well, that is, no, actually, because if he...
It's okay for him to be removed?
If he gets relief on his withholding and CAT claims, the deportation order remains fully intact. He is not contesting his deportability grounds. He's not contesting the validity of the deportation order. Rather, his claim is that the agency acted arbitrarily and unlawfully when considering the merits of his defense to deportation.
Didn't these claims come all the way through and up to the Ninth Circuit, which denied relief?
Those claims involved whether there's substantial evidence to support the IJ's adverse credibility finding. This APA claim is contending that the BIA has law and practice which says that a false asylum application cannot be the basis to categorically deny a CAT and withholding case. That's supported by Ninth Circuit authority and BIA authority. And also under matter of PULA, a false asylum application is not a basis for an adverse credibility finding in the asylum context, but it can go to the matter of discretion.
So what should Congress have said beyond saying exclusive remedy?
Well, what St. Cyr says is that it has to be expressed. It would have denied collateral attacks and direct attacks. Because it permits collateral attacks, and there's no bar against that, all the collateral attacks have been allowed to proceed. Now, at page 4243 in the record, Mr. Martinez actually brings in a BIA decision which supports his APA claim. In that case, it was an Indonesian man who filed a false asylum application, but the BIA correctly followed its law and practice and said that he's still permitted to seek CAT and withholding. And moreover, the concurrence recognized that if there's a strong showing of persecution, a false asylum application will not even defeat an asylum claim. Mr. Martinez is saying that the BIA is bound under the APA to lawfully apply this and cannot withhold the same treatment towards other people as it must towards him.
So what do you do with the Second Circuit case, Delgado Quarantillo?
That completely followed, and factually in footnote 2, cited the Morales-Izquierdo case. That was not a Real ID Act. That was a zipper clause question. And on the zipper clause, what happened with Morales-Izquierdo is that the Ninth Circuit, again, looked at the nature of the claim. It said that it did not have jurisdiction over that claim because that petitioner was bringing a challenge to his inadmissibility waiver. And the court noted that there was a reinstatement order in the record. The court went so far to say, if there wasn't a reinstatement order, we could actually see a viable challenge as a collateral attack. However, because there is a reinstatement order, and in essence, he's trying to attack the validity of that reinstatement order, they're inextricably linked to the reinstatement order was the holding of Morales.
How about Estrada versus Holder, the Seventh Circuit case?
Well, in that case, that involved a completely different situation in which there was a question of who had the proper form to review the rescission of the LPR status. And there was both a pending an MTR, a motion to reopen before the BIA, and a district court action.
Well, but didn't the court say the complaint filed in the district court alleging an APA violation is the equivalent of a challenge to an order of removal within the meaning of 8 U.S.C. section 1252A5. And again, it goes on to state that subsection permits judicial review only via petition for review in the Court of Appeals. Isn't this, in essence, an attempt to challenge an order of removal?
No, because the difference is in Estrada, what was notable is that there is still a live and pending action before the BIA. And the Seventh Circuit said the BIA has to decide this first. This can't go to the district court. What we have here is that Ms. Martinez is looking at how the BIA follows its own law and its own practice towards similarly situated individuals who have false asylum applications. His scope is beyond his own case. It's beyond matters of his own record. He's looking at how the agency conducts itself.
So what's the relief you're seeking in the complaint?
Well, we have three different counts. In the first two, we're seeking permission for him to keep the deportation order intact and allow him to continue to apply for his CAT and his withholding claims, which would defer the existing deportation order. It would not disrupt it. The third complaint...
And not be removed.
Well, but that's only because he's eligible, if he can show that he has a valid defense. We're asking for a review of the merits of that question. If he can't show that he has the merits, that the deportation order would remain.
And you're saying that's different from what you argued in your petition for review to the Ninth Circuit.
Correct. The Ninth Circuit was solely about whether there was an adverse credibility determination. And in the first case before the Ninth Circuit panel said there wasn't an adequate basis, remanded it. The BIA reinstated that. It went back to the second panel, which then said that there was substantial evidence. That was simply about substantial evidence, adverse credibility determination. He's not seeking to relitigate that at all. Rather, he's looking at how the laws and the rules need to be applied to him.
Can you cite any authority of any court that has allowed that to happen in the same circumstance?
Well, no, I could not find any APA action where this was permitted. However, there's no per se rule precluding jurisdiction over an APA action, and there's no court that says that he can't proceed when there's a collateral attack. I would submit that under Singh v. Gonzalez and Morales v. Izquierdo, Mr. Morales has distinguished his case adequately.
And could you have raised this in your petition for review to the Ninth Circuit? Why not?
Well, I could have, but...
You waived it?
No, because according to the Singh case, this was the same argument at page 979, and there the Ninth Circuit says that Singh may have an alternative avenue for relief does not change our statutory analysis. That would be a res judicata claim, perhaps, but the government never raised it down below on that issue. That would be a claim preclusion, not an issue preclusion claim, and that has since been waived. What we have here, though, is that, once again, the Singh doesn't look as to what could have been brought. It looks at what is the nature of the claim, and because it's a collateral attack, jurisdiction still remains. The third reason why jurisdiction vests is that the government argued that other circuits are adopting the government's broad definition of removal order and broad application of the Real ID and Zipper Clause. However, where there in the skirt,
but you're saying that because he's seeking a the holding off of deportation instead of removability, that makes the distinction here.
Yes, he's not contesting the validity of whether he's deportable. He conceded deportability; that was a proper finding by the IJ. He's not attempting to disturb it.
ARERA, the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996, eliminate the previous legal distinction between deportation, removal, and exclusion, and merged all into a broader category of removal?
It did, however, because his case was brought before IRA, he still has a deportation order. So he's seeking to defer his deportation order, not a removal order.
But it's still considered the same.
For this particular case, yes. There's no. If he had been ordered removed, we would be seeking the same relief, and the same laws and principles would be applying.
Okay. Did you want to reserve the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sarah Wilson, and I'll be arguing on behalf of the government. May it please the court. We ask that this court affirm the district court's order granting the government...
Could you raise your voice?
Sure. I think I might be slightly too short for the microphone. Yeah.
Some of the courtrooms have an adjustable podium. We don't in
this
courtroom.
This one's too sturdy to be adjustable, Your Honor.
Speak right up.
All right. Well, we ask that this court affirm the district court's order granting the government's motion to dismiss.
Tell us what's wrong with your opponent's argument.
Well, there's several things wrong, Your Honor. I think that perhaps the most obvious defect is the jurisdictional defect. It's clear that the court lacked jurisdiction to rule on these claims because those claims are so intimately tied to the claims that they made before the Board of Immigration Appeals and this court on its petition for review. This court has said that the test in determining whether the challenge whether a challenge is intertwined with a final order of removal such that the Real ID Act would apply is basically the question is, does the challenge directly implicate that order of removal, or alternatively, is it independent of the merits of the petition for review?
On what basis did he seek asylum review in the other proceeding?
Well, I think that there was several bases that were raised, Your Honor. The first was that there was an adverse credibility issue, as opposing counsel suggested.
No, he said, I've been persecuted, and I have a reasonable fear of future persecution based on what?
The first time or the second time, Your Honor? There's two different claims made before the IJ.
Tell me about both.
Well, the first claim, Your Honor, was regarding his membership in a political organization. He claims that he claimed that he was persecuted on the basis of his sexual orientation. So, So the test essentially is whether or not the challenge would directly implicate that order of removal, or whether it's so intimately tied to the issues that would have been raised by the petition for review. And here, regardless of whether Mr. Martinez admits that those arguments were made before the board and before this court in its 2009 decision on the same issue, there are definitely issues that implicate the question of removability. And the court found that that final order of removal was valid and that he was not entitled to any additional forms of relief. I think that the Morales case perhaps speaks most directly on how this court should view the question, because it talks about how the court viewed a petition or an application for an adjustment of status. It determined that by a challenge to that application for adjustment of status, because it necessarily impugned the validity of that removal order, it should be said to be part of a challenge to that removal order. And the language that the court used, it relied heavily on the Supreme Court's discussions in Foddy and Chadha, and finding that a challenge to the final removal order includes challenges of discretionary relief that is ancillary to the order of deportation. And that's exactly what we have here, Your Honor. All of the challenges are related to requests for relief that are ancillary to the removal order, those requests for withholding or an opportunity to reopen to explore the Convention Against Torture relief. So here we essentially have an APA challenge that is designed to funnel these claims that should be channeled into the Court of Appeals through the Real ID Act and allow a second bite at the apple in the district court. And further, Your Honor, I'd note that this isn't just a second bite at the apple. It would be, for this court, the fifth time that it's ruled on it, with the two petitions for the two PFRs, a motion to rehear through the panel, and a motion to rehear en banc. It's clear that he's had his day in court and that there should be no further relief available to him.
What distinguishes, though, this case from claims that are independent? Because I think that's what your opposing counsel is arguing, that this is independent of the determination of removal, such as a challenge to detention conditions. What distinguishes this case from those independent types of claims?
Well, in all the cases where the Ninth Circuit has found that there was an independent challenge, those involve things that were very clearly distinct from the final order of removal. So the detention decision, whether or not an alien remains detained during the course of the proceedings doesn't necessarily indicate anything about the availability of relief or whether that order may ultimately become final. Additionally, the only other case that's been discussed so far is that of the Ali case is cited in Mr. Martinez's brief. That this discussion about whether or not you can remove someone to a country that doesn't have a government, that calls in the question of the idea of putting into effect that removal order, not whether that initial finding of removability was correct. So essentially, I don't know that we have to be really specific on where to draw the line, because it's clear that all of those cases involved things that were very independent from the order of removal, whereas here we have something much more like Morales, where the relief sought is intimately tied to that final order of removal and is indeed something that could have been sought before the Board of Immigration Appeals and in front of this court in the petition for review.
And I asked opposing counsel this question. Let me frame it differently. Is there any authority that the government has identified, or any Ninth Circuit, or prohibiting the exercise of APA jurisdiction? Is there any Ninth Circuit authority that would prohibit this kind of jurisdiction to review a proceeding to remove an alien from the United States in this manner?
We don't have anything that in the published cases that are as direct as a challenge to the entitlement to withholding of removal or CAT relief. But I think that the cases, both Morales and the ones that discuss citizenship, I think that's EASU, there's an unpublished case called OAJA. Both of those dealt with whether or not a citizenship claim could be reviewed in course of the whether or not the challenge to the denial of a citizenship claim could be reviewed. And I think both of those come much closer because those are forms of relief that are intimately tied to that order of removal. And as far as the distinction between the APA challenges versus the habeas challenges, I think it's clear that there is no distinction in the statute. And I think that the cases that we've cited in our brief also indicate that protection would extend beyond the habeas context. And specifically the Estrada case, I think, dealt with a claim that was made in the APA context.
And did you waive the res judicata?
No, Your Honor. Maybe I should talk about that for a few moments. Under the doctrine of res judicata, a party is barred from relitigating claims that the same parties litigated where there was a final order, a final judgment on the merits. And here we have a case where the Ninth Circuit, in a published opinion, has upheld the final order of removal and preclusively resolved all of the issues that are associated with the challenges to that order. Mr. Martinez specifically challenged in his petition for review to this court the board's decision to decline to reopen proceedings so that he could pursue CAT relief. That's exactly the same relief that's being sought in this case. There's essentially no difference in the request and what is ultimately sought. The end game here, I guess, is how you'd put it. And before, in that PFR, he also argued that the board acted arbitrarily in failing to properly apply the law. There was a discussion on whether it properly followed previous Ninth Circuit precedent. There's no reason that the matter of PULA arguments couldn't have been made at that time as well. When determining whether or not these claims are identical for purposes of claim preclusion, you look at whether the rights decided in the first action would be impaired by the second action. And I think that is especially clear here, where the Ninth Circuit essentially went through and said, we don't believe any of these claims. We find that the lack of credibility in this case is striking, and that there is no entitlement to reopening, and there is no entitlement to any further relief. For this court to question that decision would essentially nullify the decision that was previously made. A second factor that you may look to is whether substantially the same evidence is presented in the two actions, or whether the same actions involve the same rights, or whether they involve a common nucleus of operative fact. And perhaps the most obvious way to demonstrate this is to look at the briefs that were filed to this court in the Ninth Circuit. The fact sections that were submitted in the briefs before in this matter are essentially the same as the ones that were filed previously in the 2009 case. It's clear that these operative facts are almost completely overlapping. To the extent that this new decision that Mr. Martinez raised, first I'd point out that it's a 2006 decision that happened previously to the court hearing arguments in the 2009 case, and it's also one that would fall within that same common nucleus of operative fact. There's no reason to believe that this it makes it so different that the claim is essentially anew. I'd also point out that they never raised the matter of PULA argument. So, to the extent that this would just be a supplement to that argument, which they failed to make. So, to the extent that this is a new argument, I don't think that that's enough to escape the binding effect of res judicata, because those arguments, there's an obligation to make all of the arguments that relate to a common nucleus of operative fact. Unless Your Honors have any further questions.
Judge Fletcher, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
On the claim preclusion, the government confuses claim preclusion with issue preclusion. Under claim preclusion, there has to be a final order on the same nucleus of facts. Mr. Martinez is raising the fact that the BIA treated his claim differently than the Indonesian applicant who also filed a false asylum application. That was not a part of the earlier litigations. It could not have been brought in the earlier litigation simply because there would be no way for the court to take judicial notice of how the BIA is treating other people. As a result, the claim preclusion issue does not foreclose Mr. Martinez's relief before the court. On the Morales-Izquierdo case, this court recognizes that there is a very distinct and nuanced line drawing between a collateral attack and a direct attack on a removal order. In the very same decision in which it held the facts on the case supported a direct attack, it recognized that the exact same claim absent a reinstatement order, could have been a collateral attack and allowed to proceed under the Real ID Act. The government at core is erroneous because it's seeking a per se jurisdiction stripping rule, which is not supported by the Ninth Circuit jurisdiction or any other jurisdiction. The Maydew and Commissari cases from the 11th and 3rd Circuit support this case. In those cases, the aliens were saying that there is no removal order under which they were taken out of the country. The government raised the exact same attacks that it did in this case, which is said it's precluded under Real ID Act, it's precluded under the Zipper Clause, it's precluded under 1252G. The 11th Circuit rejected each and every one of those because it said the question of whether there's an existence of a removal order does not attack the validity of a removal order, and therefore jurisdiction exists. And so finally, I would submit that the main issue before the court is whether Mr. Martinez's claim is whether it's a direct attack or a collateral attack. Because it's a collateral attack, the Real ID Act did not strip jurisdiction, and he should be allowed to proceed in the district court on the merits of his APA claim.
Okay. Judge Fletcher, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your presentations today. We're ready to proceed to the next case on our docket. This case is submitted.